The Norman Rockwell Museum is currently presenting Never Abandon Imagination, the fantastical art of Tony D. Terlizzi. It's an exhibition of works by the acclaimed illustrator-writer that will be on view at the museum through the 28th of May. Known for a successful book series, The Spiderwick Chronicles, Dieterlizzi is widely celebrated for his images of such fantasy creatures as fairies, trolls, sprites, and goblins. Never Abandon Imagination has been organized by the Norman Rockwell Museum. It showcases over 150 original paintings and drawings from the games Dungeons & Dragons and Magic, The Gathering, to his many fantasy and children's books, in addition to artworks from his childhood and college years. The exhibition will also highlight the artist's influences and artistic process. It is a great pleasure to welcome Tony. Let's try that all again. We welcome Tony D. Terlizzi, as well as Jesse Kowalski, curator of exhibitions at Norman Rockwell Museum. Once I get my tongue retyped, all will be well. Good morning, Tony. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. And you got my last name right. I'm so used to I usually don't get the first name wrong. It's usually the last name.
Yeah, Donnie.
Yeah, Donnie. Donnie. That's good.
Yeah.
Although, I guess we're a little further. Hey, Donnie. Hey,
That's right. We got it. And Jesse, good morning. Nice morning. To have you here.
Yeah, it's good to be back.
All right. Well, let's begin with you of how this collection came about and how the exhibition, why you knew you wanted to do this.
Well, actually, Tony contacted me first, I believe, right?
Yeah.
And he said he just wanted to meet with me. And so we met and looked at his artwork. And I think we initially thought it would be an exhibit on his children's book material.
Yeah.
And then once I started to look into the D&D work, the Magic the Gathering work, and some of his childhood drawings, then I thought, you know, we had a really great exhibition. And we could devote an entire room to Dungeons & Dragons, an entire room to Spiderwick, and then an entire room to his children's books.
So when you think about doing an exhibit, what does that mean for you as the illustrator of, okay, now I have to look at my life and work and see what I'm going to put on display for the masses?
Yeah, it is. I am definitely kind of like a shark. I'm always kind of moving and moving forward on my next books and projects. So I don't often turn around and look back at the work that I've created. And certainly when Jesse came over to the studio early on in the curatorial process and said, I want to dedicate a ton of artwork to Dungeons & Dragons and Magic the Gathering, where I got my start, I thought he was crazy. But I love that. I love that he was able to see the path, and I think there's a story that starts to form through the dialogue that he and I had together. And the story was this kind of path that I've taken as a kid growing up in Florida who liked to draw, who becomes, you know, best-selling, you know, children's book creator.
So Jupiter, Florida. Right?
Yes, that's right. Home of Burt Reynolds.
There you go.
That was her claim to fame. Yes.
Nice. And and my brother's ex-wife, but that's another story. So, but you grow up there, and you get in. How does Dungeons and Dragons come into your life? Because is infatuated a good word? I don't know.
I mean, I think I was a nerd from that grew up in the 70s and the 80s, and so for a hot minute, right, everyone in the country was playing Dungeons and Dragons, and then we moved on to Rubik's Cubes or arcade games and stuff. So I it was just one of those games that really struck a chord with me when I was younger, and I think because the world that Gary Gygax had created was just so rich. I mean, it was drawn from J.R.R. Tolkien and mythology, and it actually came at a time, to be honest with you, when I wasn't reading as much. I'd kind of slipped out of reading and was reading a lot of comic books, so I was like probably 6th or 7th grade, and Dungeons & Dragons certainly became kind of a gateway for me to become a big, avid reader of fantasy. And that's when I did start reading Lord of the Rings and Lloyd Alexander's Prydain Chronicles and on and on and on. It's just something that always stuck with me. And I think when I graduated from art school in the early 90s, I thought about what an impact it had. And I had started gaming with a bunch of my buddies. We graduate college, and so you do what you do. You move back home.
Right.
Where the food is cheap and you can get your laundry done.
Right, you can actually spend time in your craft and not have to worry about, you know, making a living for that moment.
Yeah, you're like, as the student loan bills loom. My friends actually encouraged me. Some of my old buddies that I reconnected with said, I think you could do art for the company that publishes this. And so I spent a better part of a year submitting drawings and pictures to the art director. And by the end of the year, I got in and I worked with them for nearly 10 years.
Who were the influences of the early art that influenced you and helped you sort of figure out your art for that? Publication, right? I mean, it was basically, it's a game, but it's also
all little books, right?
Yeah, they're publications.
Well, I was a kid who drew and went to a public school down in Jupiter, but I mean, there's a lot of kids that draw. So, growing up in the 70s, I loved Star Wars. I loved monsters. I loved nature. I was out in nature hiking. I was a Boy Scout, and in the early 80s, I don't know if you remember, there was some great. There was like a resurgence in fantasy. Rankin and Bass had done that animated version of The Hobbit, which
yes.
I loved.
Right.
Jim Henson did a couple amazing films, starting with The Dark Crystal, which really was amazing.
Game
to
changer,
me.
Yeah.
Yeah, it really was. And there was a couple of concept artists who had a book out called Fairies. One fellow's name was Brian Froud, and Brian was the concept artist for The Dark Crystal and later for Labyrinth. And Alan Lee also worked on this fairy book with Brian. And Alan would go on to win the Academy Award for his design work in the Lord of the Rings films that Peter Jackson directed. And so they had this fairy book that came out in the 70s, and it just blew my mind. Oh, the way they it was not Tinkerbell. These were like very feral, natural spirits that just, you know, they had branches and they were covered in bark and they were dirty, and it just awakened my imagination, and that had a tremendous impact on me growing up.
So you do this for 10 years, and then how do you, the maturation of an artist, how do you then decide that you're going to go in other directions?
I had always wanted to do children's books. I mean, I was one of those people that I think when at a very young age kind of knew what I wanted to do, and I always wanted to be an illustrator. I always loved pairing pictures with words the same way you'd pair a lyric with a melody in a great song. I always liked those parts together. I felt like it told a richer story. And so I tried to submit my ideas and my illustrations to all the big publishers in New York City for children's books when I was in college, but to no avail. And it really took moving up to New York and living in the city and kind of, you know, pounding the pavement, knocking on doors to get in. But the incredible thing was, in my years working on Dungeons & Dragons, I learned, I erroneously thought that it was like, all right, I'm going to draw, you know, dungeons and
dragons.
And knights and wizards, but there was so much more to it than that, because it wasn't just the monsters and the characters that the gamers play. It's what kind of artifacts do they use? What kind of magical items? What does their armor look like? What does their other attire look like? What do the ruins look like? What does the architecture look like? And before you know it, you're understanding an imagined world. So I was learning how to do world building. This becomes incredibly influential, especially in a series like the Spiderwick Chronicles.
When you see the show, Jesse, I mean, one of the things that is so, I think, apparent is just how diverse the art is. So we talk about, the Dungeons & Dragons and the Spiderwick Chronicles and going on, but you see just how varied it is.
Yeah, I talk a lot in the book about how there is no Tony DiTerlizzi style. Style seems to change from book to book.
Yeah.
And it's really influenced, I think, by the artists, you know, Tony's looking at when he's doing the story. Spiderwick Chronicles, I think Arthur Rackham was a big influence, and so the drawings in that book are influenced by him. And Kenny and the Dragon, I think Ernest Shepard was an influence.
Right.
And so the drawings for that book look like Ernest Shepard's drawings. And so I think with Tony, it really depends on the story and how the art's going to work with the story.
Talk about that, about Winnie the Pooh and Ernest Shepard, because there's a piece in the catalog with the iconic picture of Christopher Robin coming down the stairs with Pooh sort of bump behind him.
I grew up with those books. I mean, my mom read them to me when I was very young, and so you grow up looking at those pictures, but you don't necessarily think about the people who write those words or draw those pictures. And so it's natural, of course, that I would in time emulate that kind of scratchy pen style of Ernest Shepard, because it had been in my life for as long as I can remember. I think to what Jesse's talking about, I do listen to what the story's telling me, and I think about how best to what mediums would work best to convey the mood or the feeling or the emotional core of what the story is telling me. The best I can maybe relate it to you is like with a song, and if you were a guitar player, are you going to play an electric guitar? Are you going to play an acoustic guitar? Are you going to play maybe a banjo, not a guitar at all, but a similar instrument? It's kind of that way for me when I look at the story. Would it be softer if I did these drawings in like a soft pencil, mm-hmm. or should I use like a hard black India ink to tell the story? Should I paint it? Should I do it on the computer? I mean, each kind of variation lends a kind of emotional feeling to the story. And so as an illustrator, I try to hone in on that and figure how best to my skills that I can convey that in the pictures for the readers. It's almost like a little movie. You know, you're thinking about, you know, camera angles and things like that as well.
Because you look at that type of work, and I was looking at the comparison to Shepard, but also even to like James Thurber, right? I mean, that's sort of that kind of.
Oh wow, yeah. I mean, I think folks like Thurber are beyond my thinking. They're abstracting it down and doing.
But there's
things.
A simplicity.
Absolutely, but it's
a complex
a complex simplicity. Yes, it's what they're not saying. That's like saying writing a poem is easy,
right?
Because there's so few words, and so artists like that. I can't do that. I need more details. It's hard for me to peel the details away and boil it down to a basic shape or an essence.
So let me ask you this question, and then you can bounce however much you want off onto Jesse. But that is also the influence, of course, of Norman Rockwell.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, the brilliance of what Rockwell's doing is he's what would take me an entire book to tell that story. He has the ability to do in one painting. There's so much storytelling going on in every single image, from the props, from the acting that the models are doing, and from the surrounding setting. And I grew up looking at Rockwell's stuff. My parents were big fans of Rockwell's. My dad took the famous artist course when I was a kid. And so he was always like Shepard, like Rackham, later like Brian Froud. These people were part of my landscape. Growing up, and so I inevitably soaked in their art and their inspiration.
Jesse, what do you see the threads to Rockwell's work being, and how you connect that with an audience coming into the museum?
Yeah, I mean, with Tony's work, there's a little bit of Norman Rockwell in everything, it seems. You know, his early children's books, Ted and Jimmy Zangwill, are kind of set in a Norman Rockwell kind of world. You know, and Tony's slogan, the title of the exhibit, Never Abandon Imagination, you know, it's about inspiring people. And, you know, that's what Norman Rockwell did. And so I think, you know, Tony's really carrying on the tradition of illustration that way.
What is it like to see that stuff on that wall?
Weird. Bizarre. Like I'm in an alternate world. I mean, that's certainly like see like one of my little painting portrait next to, you know, Rockwell's triple self portrait. I mean, a painting that I've been staring at in print form for as long as I can remember. It's bizarre.
What do you think about Dungeons and Dragons at the Rockwell Museum?
That is it's a first as far as we know. We've checked with some people who are now chronicling the history of Dungeons and Dragons. This is probably the first time that this gaming art has ever been hung in an institution like this. And I feel honored that it's me. I think there's probably other artists that it should have been. But I'm happy to open that door, and hopefully we'll see more of gaming art treated probably the way comic art is on the way to being viewed.
What do you think it is about gaming art that brings so much of us into the game and also helps conjure up what we're thinking and give us the mood of how we're playing?
Well, I mean, I think when you think about a game like Dungeons & Dragons, right, very simply you have a dungeon master who's basically the narrator,
right.
And then you have all the players who are playing their various characters. So the artwork in a that's used in a Dungeons & Dragons game, so you get the booklet, which is your adventure. It tells you, okay, in this room there's this, and in this room there's that, and there's the treasure, and there's the monster. So the illustrations aren't necessarily showing you a perfect narrative. They're really just showing you what-if scenarios. you know, there's some physical things like, you know, these are what the walls look like and this is what the monster looks like, but you don't necessarily draw someone slaying the monster or finding the treasure, because that's really up to the characters to do. So it's got a very interesting role versus a straight narrative where, okay, I'm now showing Bilbo Baggins, you know, finding the ring in the cave. It's very different for what Dungeons & Dragons utilizes visuals for.
How much were they telling you what they wanted, and how much of it was just a free rein to say, oh, okay, this is what I wanted?
A little of both. I mean, they certainly have, the game designers understand that there's a function, both I think with Magic the Gathering cards and the Dungeons & Dragons booklets. Like, you know, there's certain rules and stuff that have to be illustrated in the drawing. I think as time went on, at least for me in my experience in the 90s, I was given more freedom to kind of do my thing. I think there was a trust that was built in at that point where they're like, okay, we pretty much know how Tony's going to draw it. We know what he'll do. And I was usually agreeable to any changes they might have. usually
agreeable. And then you get to create your own worlds.
Yeah.
Then you get to go and create your own world. And that has got to be just exciting and wonderful and scary.
Overwhelming. And yeah. Because there's no parameters now.
Right.
I'm not relying. I mean, those early picture books, like Jesse mentioned, I leaned heavily on my influences like Norman Rockwell. And then when it came time to do the Spiderwick Chronicles, I had Holly Black, who I worked with on it. So I had at least someone else that I was kind of in it with.
But we just had her in here. Man, is she great.
Yeah, she's fantastic. She's funny. She's funnier than I am. Yeah. She's funny.
So when you do that and you create that world, you know, at what point do you know that people are coming along on the ride with you?
When you're creating it, you have no idea. You don't know. You don't know when you're making it.
But after a book or two, you do. Right?
Well, absolutely. Once the books come out, yeah, you start hearing it. I mean, Spiderwick, we certainly had there was a lot of excitement within the publisher, and we were like, this seems pretty good, this could be good. And then when it came out and you started seeing the crowds getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and then the movie and then all that other stuff starting to happen, you were like, holy cow, this is unbelievable, this is incredible. And so it's at once freeing, and at the same time you felt more responsible than ever, right? You weren't actually as free, because you're like, when we create this thing, we have to stay true to who we are, but somehow now there's a lot more eyes on it, not just within the publisher, but also with fans and stuff.
And as you go on, what are you working on right now that allows you still, are you still just keeping up with what you've created, or are you still trying to create new things?
No, I always try to create new stuff. Yeah, okay. I just finished a Christmas book, which will be out this year. I just finished all the final paintings. And so this one took me a couple years to develop the story and figure out what the story was. And then once I did, you know, get the paintings completed, it's a challenge. I think more for me now, because of some of my successes and maintaining things like Spiderwick and stuff like that, and being a dad, you know, I mean, I don't want to miss that. I think it would be hypocritical of me to rejoice in childhood and celebrate childhood through all these stories and yet be the dad that's never around for my kid.
Right.
So I try to block out serious time and spend time with my daughter and revisit. I mean, Jesse will tell you I'm a giant kid anyway. My studio is filled with toys and a lot of books and games from when I was 10. But that's only part of childhood. There's so much more that happens in the day-to-day that's so important to a child, that as a storyteller for children is really important for me to see.
So, and I'll end with you on this question, and that is, what is it like to have children as an audience, being your primary audience?
Invigorating, hopeful, and also scary, because children usually don't mince words. They don't usually have the niceties that we as adults do. They won't lie to your face like that. They will tell you, I liked this part of the book, but this part I really didn't care for. I kind of like that. They're just straight shooters that way. I like inspiring them. I'm very hopeful for the next generation. Certainly some of the stuff that I've seen in the news gives me a lot of hope for the next generation. And I think as a storyteller, the thread that in my art And then all the narratives has always been imagination, because I've always felt that imagination is such an important part of what we do as a society. It's what put us on the moon. It's what will bring us to the bottom of the ocean. It's what will cure some of the diseases that plague mankind. Imagination has always been such an integral part of us as a species. And so I will always celebrate that in every story that I tell.
The title of this show is Never Abandon Imagination. And Jesse, as curator of exhibitions, what do you hope that this exhibit tells people and in connection with the story that the entire museum is telling?
Well, just like I said before, just to show that Tony's work is really an extension of the illustrators who came before, like Arthur Rackham, Ernest Shepherd, Norman Rockwell, and to put Tony in the place of those illustrators, and to show, you know, there are different kinds of illustration, like Dungeons and Dragons, children's book illustration, and to bring in kids who would like the children's book, you know, 40-year-old guys who would like Dungeons and Dragons, and then the older people who are bringing in their grandchildren.
Good stuff. Yeah. Well, the Norman Rockwell Museum is currently presenting Never Abandon Imagination, The Fantastical Art of Tony Dieterlese. It is an exhibition of works by the acclaimed illustrator and writer that will be on view at the museum through May 28th, 2018. You can find out more by going to nrm.org. Jesse Kowalski is curator of exhibitions at the Norman Rockwell Museum. And Tony, what a great pleasure to have you on the program. A delight. I've been a big fan of your work, and to have you here, it means a lot to me. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you. I had a great time.
Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.